preface my presentation by discussing the climate in terms of perceiving governmental partnerships as a situation that presents a lack of transparency or even compromising the integrity of regulatory agencies. My previous background was an industrial hygienist with Kentucky OSHA, and we would conduct these VPP certifications. And during this process, I wanted to find more empirical ways to assess safety performance. And in terms of assessing safety performance, generally speaking, you'll look at indicators such as lost work days, restricted work activities. But in many respects, they could be perceived as antiquated and not as useful. This evaluation looked at triangulating the data or quantifying the data in terms of determining safety performance. And again, I'll preface this statement by saying we're not generalizing towards all VPP partnerships. Currently, we have 2 to 3 different partnerships, the Merit, the STAR, and the SHARPS program. Number-wise, we started out at about 11 in 1982, and at the federal level, we're up to about 12 to 1,300. We're not trying to generalize towards a specific population. However, we're looking at a specific program evaluation, more of a case study, and we're going to present some evidence to hopefully describe some of the transparency in terms of criteria for VPP programs. The major goal of this evaluation was to eventually influence policy either at the state or federal level in terms of criteria for specific partnerships between governmental agencies and private sector organizations based on industry or sector. Purpose of the study, examine the process of a governmental partnership. When we say process in terms of regulatory agencies making this determination, it's structured in a way where they're able to look at a document review, provide an on-site investigation, and come to a conclusion in terms of accepting this organization as a partner. Perceptions. This is a weakness that I saw in the overall evaluation. The perceptions would typically come from inspectors. They might be a safety inspector or industrial hygienist. And what I was concerned with this study was to expand examining perceptions based on position and company. And I think, too, in terms of perception of risk and to be able to identify any gaps in perceptions of program effectiveness, I felt that it would be utility in that from a program perspective to be able to identify gaps in perceptions of program effectiveness and then look at proper intervention. Organizational factors. What role does the mission statement play in terms of safety performance? When we say mission statement, can we measure what an organization is making an attempt to commit to? The basic hypothesis in this was there would be no differences in perceptions of program effectiveness simply because if it was considered a VPP site, they should have met the criteria, and the criteria should focus on management-driven objectives and employee-driven objectives. So we took a survey instrument and looked at perceptions of program effectiveness, and the survey instrument is the OSHA Form 33. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this form, but it's a way that you could quantify differences in perceptions of program effectiveness based on major elements. What's interesting here is the OSHA inspector or compliance officer will conduct this evaluation using this form his or herself. No input from employees in terms of management, labor. So what I did, I expanded this particular survey instrument to include various positions in the company along with the compliance officer's perception of program effectiveness. So assuming that it was considered a VPP partnership, there would be no differences in perceptions of program effectiveness. This is the actual form. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the form that the Department of Labor uses. It's on an ordinal scale. So your background information in terms of criteria on this survey instrument. And again, the document review allowed us to look at log 200s, log 300s, accident investigation reports. So we're actually trying to look at more data to triangulate effectiveness other than antiquated injury illness rates. Major program elements, we looked at management commitment, employee involvement, hazard identification, hazard abatement, and we tried to place an empirical value on perceptions of program effectiveness. And in the past, they would basically look at frequency distributions. If the inspector had more fours than zeros, okay, or if they had more twos than ones, they were considered effective enough to be considered in the partnership. We went beyond frequency distributions, looking at inferential statistics to determine whether or not there was any statistical significance between differences in perceptions based on specific variables. And variables could be years of service, education, position in company, and we would compare and contrast these based on individuals in the company, even the compliance officer. And again, this is just an additional way for us to triangulate safety performance. So we're looking at the document review, looking at injury and illness rates, experience modification numbers. We actually conducted 25 interviews just to get an idea of individuals' perception of program effectiveness. So we're using these three data sources to come to more of an empirical conclusion on effectiveness. You'll see a downward trend, and typically in most evaluations, it's an extended process. The VPP process, based on my experience in Kentucky, is not a process that can be completed within a year or even 2 years. They want to look at trends, and you'll see the declining trend in terms of total case incident rate, and you see number of hours worked. And so you see an increase in production, and you see a decrease in total case incident rate. And so this was another metric that we looked at over time to determine program effectiveness. Yes. This was a construction company, obviously located in a high-hazard industry. And again, we would be able to use some of our results to highlight that organizations can reduce incident rates and still function in high-hazard industries and increase productivity. Experience modification rates. Typically, in most audits, they don't look at other metrics in terms of efficiency or measuring safety performance. So we even went beyond OSHA log 200 and 300 at that time and looked at experience modification rates. And you do see somewhat of a linear relationship, you know, between the decline in injury illness rates, and you see a decline in experience modification. And experience modification is an insurance metrics in terms of workers' compensation in high-hazard industries. See, it was actually, they had a flag-raising ceremony in about 2003. And for the state of Kentucky, it's a state plan. It's somewhat unique in terms of accepting high-hazard industries into at the time, this particular program. In the past, if you were considered a high-hazard industry, you were restricted from applying, and this is at the state level in Kentucky. And this was the first construction company accepted into the VPP program. Document review, we looked at incentives or disincentives to manipulate employee behavior, quality of education in terms of instructional design methods, being able to assess competencies for training. This was a very extensive evaluation here. We looked at more of the qualitative perspective of assessing safety performance through oral interviews. And in terms of the survey instrument, this is more a frequency distribution in terms of perceptions between management and labor. And you see some consistency in terms of their perceptions of program effectiveness. And we went beyond this and looked at inferential statistics in terms of chi-squares, ANOVA, and we did not find any statistical significance in terms of differences of perceptions of program effectiveness. So it somewhat validated this particular program being accepted into the partnership. And I propose that if you triangulate your data in terms of assessing a safety performance, you're more likely to select organizations that should be considered high performing in terms of safety performance. You know, so my recommendation would be in terms of future partnerships to eliminate any perceptions of conflict of interest between regulatory agencies, private sector organizations, or even to highlight the fact that we have transparency based on our evaluation. And we're not generalizing towards a larger population. Just in this specific case study, based on our evaluation methods, we perceived it to be worthy to be included as the best of the best in terms of safety performance. And this is an overall statistic here based on the industries in this area. You're looking at the decline of 52% below average industry in terms of days away from work or restricted work activity. Excellent question. You can go to the OSHA's VPP website, and it will give you an idea of partnerships based on employer size. We are seeing a trend that larger organizations, obviously with the resources, can commit to becoming VPP. To give you an example of that, General Electric, at the time when they had the CEO, Jack Welch, he made a commitment to have all of his locations VPP certified. And, of course, resources are tremendous in terms of making that commitment, and it could be a challenge for smaller organizations. They do have partnerships, and they would characterize these partnerships as VPP on training wheels. So they would assist you in terms of consultation and working with you to eventually apply for a VPP certification or the STAR process. Answer to that would be further research is needed in terms of safety performance. But again, this is a major issue, being able to empirically quantify safety performance. We know about lagging indicators and we know about leading indicators, but from a federal perspective or state perspective, it's difficult to look at safety performance in terms of behavior. We know that perceptions of behaviors are antecedents or perceived risk are antecedents to at-risk behavior. So it's a challenge in terms of being able to change requirements in terms of leading indicators to assess true safety performance. But you'll see in this particular survey, we had 25 oral interviews, and that's considered somewhat high, but we had 25 oral interviews informally addressing mission, vision, incentives, disincentives, and then gradually moved to examining perceptions. And, you know, in terms of publications, we're looking at Safety Science and a couple other journals to possibly submit this. But the sample size is low. We're not generalizing towards larger populations, so we might be able to look at organizations like Voluntary Protection Association and possibly increase our sample size.
Other questions? Yes, in the back. Mike. Taking them in reverse order, not in this study, but in a separate study of nursing homes and the effectiveness of providing lifting equipment, where the nursing homes were offered a program in which they could get a tremendous discount, almost reducing the cost to zero for the actual lifting device. We looked at that, and we found, you know, initially there was a big impact. Sorry, recorded presentation there. There was a big impact in terms of injuries, and we were not just looking at claims. We were intensely sort of going every 3 months to two dozen nursing homes, and, you know, interviewing workers, getting, you know, measures of their incidence of exertion injuries. We found a big drop, but it wasn't sustained, because after a year, the managers had all left, and so we had a new group of managers. It's like almost 100% turnover of management on average a year in a typical nursing home. So they weren't on board, didn't understand, you know, what was going on or how the program worked. Were more resistant to us coming back in to do follow-up measures. So. And your first question, yes, we did look at the size of the penalty effect, but we weren't able to get it. There's so few numbers we were able to look at through this because of this. You need to have a really well-controlled study that until we can get our numbers up, especially if we can get business location specific claims rates for multiple site employers, that's what we really need. That would bring our numbers way up. At that point, we'd really like to return to this. I want to follow it up because it's my prerogative. One thing I forgot to mention in my talk was that our biggest issue is measurement of inspection and consultation effort. That's where we don't really have a good handle on things, and I'd be welcome any suggestions you might have, especially on the consultation side. What is a consultation? Is it just a phone call answered from an employer about a very, very specific question, or is it a wall-to-wall, 2 or 3 day, you know, consultation, sit down with all the management and really, you know, there's currently the data, the systems of data collection don't really allow us to discriminate well between those two different things, and they're clearly very different. So we'd like to, and we obviously like to look at a real consultation. Of course, we don't have a lot of numbers on that either right now. But any other questions for myself or for the other panelists? One more. Well, you know, if we've put the cart before the horse for over 20 years now, it seems to me in terms of drifting towards more voluntary programs, obviously OSHA's budget shifting more towards that approach, but also at the states, and there really hasn't been any real evaluation of certainly not of consultations, and the GAO report you mentioned said they don't even collect the data that would allow a proper, you know, program evaluation. We're just starting to get some good evaluations of inspection. That should have been done long ago, and we should really figure out which kind of inspections really are effective, rather than just saying, okay, we should throw more more inspectors, more penalties. Currently, our reports would suggest that we should be very wary about, you know, taking back and reducing any further the level of inspection resource and funding that we do. Washington State is an unusual. We're more like Canada in terms of our density of inspectors. We have 150. Basically, we have 150 inspectors, safety inspectors, for 150,000 workplaces, which is much higher, about several, three or four times the national average rate. So I would say, tentatively right now, I'd say no. I'd say we are moving in the wrong direction, but obviously we need a lot more work on program evaluation. Your hand was up earlier. Did you have a...
You can answer the question.
Okay. Right. Yeah, the slides I didn't get to. Right.
So do you have a table for recommendations?
Well, I would like us to move. I would like us to move towards a real, you know, forearm study of a controlled study of inspections and consultations. Ontario has. It looks like it's going to. It may happen. They have something called the High Risk Firm Initiative, where they look at the. They're going to take the top 2% of and by claims rate of companies. I think over a three-year period, a three-year average, 2%, top 2%, and they're going to basically flood them with inspection and consultation, and they're going to then compare them to their peers in by industry to see whether, you know, what's happening to them versus companies that receive just the usual amount of resources. You know, some kind of an experimental design like that is really what any program evaluator would tell you you need to do, and that's what's what's lacking at this point. So. Anything else? Well, yeah, I do have one more thing before I let you go, and it was triggered by something I thought of in the discussion about the future of occupational safety and health discussion in the previous session, and that is that it is, to me, shocking that, you know, we have so few. We basically are talking about shifting. You know, we have this $450 million OSHA budget, which is, you know, about the size of the budget of Ontario for inspection for the entire OSHA program there. And we're talking about shifting a few million dollars here or there. And to me, it just seems ludicrous, and that we aren't just increasing this budget a lot more. The burden of the problem, certainly as that measured by Paul Lee and others, is comparable to that of some of the major chronic illnesses in this population. And yet I think because it is something that is within the employment relationship, it's kind of walled off from public kind of opinion. If this were happening, if employers were imposing these costs directly and visibly on communities, on children and so forth, this would be a front page story all the time. But I think because it's taking place within the employer-employee relationship, there is this kind of wall we've put around that as a society that says, oh, you know, that's just the bargain. That's the employment bargain. And sorry again. And we really don't get excited about that. So anyway, that's kind of my editorial. Thank you very much.